You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio by Shaq. Here's up, Shaq. Where should we start today? A bit of La Liga?
I don't know.
It's turning into some race, thanks to that, Shaq. In Spain, Real Madrid could only manage a goalless draw today away against Getafe, very much down to their bare bones. Meanwhile, Atleti, for once in seems like an age, with a comfortable win, they thrashed Eibar by 5-0, meaning that they are now 3 points clear of Real Madrid, 5 clear of Barcelona, who of course didn't play in the league this weekend. They did, however, win the Copa del Rey against Athletic Bilbao on Saturday. Well, let's welcome in. Ali will be here in a moment, but first, Julien Laurent is with us. Jules, overall, you take a look at this title race, and we always thought that Real Madrid, if they were going to be in it, needed to keep fit, didn't we? There was no depth in squad. And that was really epitomised today by the starting 11 they put out.
That's right, Dan. And I don't think Zidane had really any other choices. They play Cadiz in 3 days again, and then they will have a game at the weekend, and then it's the Champions League coming back next week. So the games are coming so quickly and so fast that he has to rotate, he has to change. There was no Nacho today, so he had to put Victor Schuster, a young player from the academy, from the reserve team, who had never started a game in La Liga before, only played, I think, 4 minutes this season in La Liga. So you play him in there, you play Marcelo, you have to rest Benzema and other big names, and even if they come on late in the game, it's not enough to win against a team like Getafe, who's fighting to stay up, and probably Getafe deserved to win on the night because they had so many chances to do so, and even if you're Zidane, you're probably happy with the draw.
7 matches to go. Real Madrid third favourites, Jules?
Not third favourite. I mean, we've had that discussion every week with Ali, and we said who is the favourite, who is not. Atleti would not go down without a fight, and we saw that today. Not many teams have beaten Eibar 5-0 today. I mean, Barcelona drew with Eibar earlier in the season, only a few weeks ago. So let's not underestimate that result for Atleti and how much that will boost them. Real Madrid is disappointing there, but with the Champions League, they will have to see what the priority is there and there. And then Barca. We'll have that confidence boosted so much by that win in the Copa del Rey that maybe they are the favourite right now.
Yeah, certainly. It was very impressive, wasn't it? That 20-minute spell where they just completely tore apart Athletic Bilbao with Lionel Messi. We've all seen that goal. It was just extraordinary.
It was incredible. And when Messi is in that kind of form, you can't stop them. And I mean, without Unai Simon in goal, I think they could have won that final 8-0 easily. They had so many chances, so much of the ball. There was a lot of fluidity about their game. Frankie de Jong was on another level once again, like he's shown at times this season. Maybe not consistently enough, but he's certainly been, when played in midfield, really good at times, like he was in that final. And everything clicked. And again, when you've got Messi in that kind of form, I think it's understandable why every single player pretty much of that team wanted a photo with Messi and the cup after the game, if they were fans, because he was just out of his world again.
Yeah, it was extraordinary. It was nice to see. And for Atleti, Jules, obviously 5-0, they'd love to play Eibar every week.
Yeah, they would love to, but let's say, again, not many teams have beaten Eibar 5-0 this season. Real Madrid beat them, but it was 2-0 at home. Barcelona, as we said, only drew 1-1 with Eibar. So it's never easy, but certainly for someone like Angel Correa, who has to replace Luis Suarez now, who is injured, to come up with a performance like he had in this first half today especially, it's great. And it's great for Simeone. And Simeone will say to the players again, look, this is what we can do. This we can fight. We're never going to go down without a fight. And they showed that tonight. This was easily a game where they could have dropped points, and instead it was one of the best performances in a very long time, and again that will also boost them coming into the next few games.
We've had some technical issues getting Ali Moreno on the show. I think he joins us now. Ali, just in time for me to ask you who's going to win La Liga.
What? is that the warm-up question?
That's it. That's your one and done.
It's some kind of ridiculous that actually, given the results today, when you think about the team that truly, truly controls its destiny, it's Barcelona. Mm-hmm. And think about the weekend that Barcelona has had in winning Copa del Rey. And now, given the result of Real Madrid, when they tie Getafe 0-0 in a game that really, to be quite honest with you, they should have lost. If Barcelona runs the table, if they win every game they have in front of them, they win La Liga. That's it. Simple as that. And so if you're Ronald Koeman in Barcelona, you say, okay, here it is in front of us. An opportunity that we didn't think we would have, we have it right in front of us. And so... for that reason, I would say, not Barcelona. It's going to be Real Madrid. Who wants this league.
Ali, why doesn't Lionel Messi do that every day?
Oh, mommy. He was great, wasn't he?
Yeah,
he was something special. The 20 minutes of Lionel Messi yesterday in the second half were as good as you could possibly find from Lionel Messi ever. The problem is that nowadays, he, much like Barcelona, cannot withstand that for a longer period of time. But for those 20 minutes, it was vintage. It was, my goodness, we've gone back in time. That third goal in which he essentially gets the ball on top of his 18-yard box, dribble and pass people, combining with Frankie de Jong, and then once he gets into the attacking half, inside the 18-yard box, a little dip of the shoulder, Unai Nunez had just come on the field, and he says, welcome to the game, son. You can't keep up. I'm about to score this. And even when he cuts inside, you're thinking he's just going to hit it as hard as he can. No. He takes the extra touch and just massages the ball to the back of the net. That from Lionel Messi was something else. But we haven't seen enough of it. And when you think about it, a week ago in El Clásico, and we didn't really see much of Lionel Messi, certainly in the second half, it's like, where did this all go? But there's no denying that it was a special 20 minutes for Messi and a special second half for Barcelona.
Ali Moreno, thank you very much. Same time, same place, same question next week. Look forward to it.
Hey, looking forward to it.
Well, maybe sooner, because there's a full program of midweek matches, including the likes of Real Madrid away against Cadiz. Meanwhile, Atletico play host to Huesca, and it's Barca against Getafe. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. AC Milan closed the gap on Inter at the top of the table as Inter could only manage a 1-1 draw against Napoli. Meanwhile, Atalanta beat Juventus 1-0, meaning they move up into third. Juve still fourth, two ahead of Napoli in fifth. Let's welcome in, shall we, Alessandro Del Piero and Gab Marcotti. Ali, let's start with you. It's where we are with Juventus at the moment, isn't it? That Atalanta beat them 1-0 and it's not really a surprise.
No, it's not a surprise for what we saw this year by Juve. They're struggling with a lot of things. Unfortunately, this is a fifth lost in the... It didn't happen from the Del Neri era, when I was playing, by the way. So not a good to remember. But anyway, and against is Atalanta. Atalanta, you know, we know in Italy especially a lot that this team is it worth the position that they have. They're doing so well for many years now, and they, what is his path also in the Champions League between last year and this year is very, very important. So now without the Champions League, they are super, super strong.
What's wrong with Juventus, Ali? When you take a look at the players on the pitch, they should be good enough. They should be putting better performances than we're seeing.
Well, first of all, it's not easy to keep, you know, winning every year. I mean, Juve is winning the title for 9 years in a row. Something that, you know, you cannot even think about that. There is some players that, you know, need to be replaced sooner or later, like the old guys, that the big guys like Chiellini, Buffon, and soon even Bonucci. And in this situation, they're going to rebuild the team. The rebuilding already started, but Juve doesn't have time to rebuild. They need all the time results. And so in this big competition that we have now in Italy with, and we saw tonight as well, Inter, how they grow, and Atalanta as well, it's not easy to keep the level up. This year, a lot of things went wrong, honestly. But they still have a chance, and they need to be careful, because the fight for the Champions League spots is on fire now. And I want to include Napoli and even Lazio, that there's 4 points behind, but one game to play.
Yeah, it's fascinating, Gab, when you think at this stage of the season, we are talking about the possibility of Juventus not making the top four. Obviously, it was a big gamble bringing Pirlo in with no coaching experience. What's plan B if he goes?
Well, look, if you listen to the club, when you ask them, why did you bring in Pirlo? Why did you make the choices that you made this summer in terms of the young players you brought in, from Kulusevski to McKennie to Federico Chiesa? They'll tell you, because we needed to get younger and because we wanted to become more of a front foot, high energy team that's comfortable in possession. We want to be a team that plays with intensity, because we believe that this is what's necessary to win in the modern game. And we see this week in, week out, in the Champions League. Why does Atalanta do better than Juve in the Champions League with worse players? Because they play with that intensity. So that is the direction of travel that they wanted to go in. They thought Pirlo shared that view. I think he does share that view. I think they're still on board with Pirlo. Certainly that's what they say. They could yet change their minds. But if they do make a change, I think it's going to be somebody who does what Pirlo wanted to do, but who they think is going to do it better, simply put. I don't think they're going back to the sort of football that we saw under Allegri, not because it was bad football, it worked in that era, but because they think in the modern game that is not sustainable and that doesn't work, especially on the European stage.
Ali, it sounds great, doesn't it? Go younger, bring more energy in. This is what we need to do if we're going to compete at the highest level in Europe. But the problem is, it's very much the detriment of what is going on short term.
Yeah, they're lacking energy, they're lacking enthusiasm sometimes, and the pressure is very high at Juve. The pressure is very high, especially with young one players, you know. And the pressure of in the club now is even higher about the latest news that's come up in the past weeks regarding Ronaldo first and other issues that are going on. But again, Juve is always under pressure. You cannot thinking, you know, a year that you, okay, let's wait, let's see what happened. No, Juve is full speed all the time. You cannot miss one game, you cannot miss the championship spot, you cannot miss a lot of things. So when the pressure is very, very high, problem can become bigger sometimes. Now they need to be very united together and strong together, because they're going to miss the Champions League. There is a possibility, honestly. It will be a big trouble from my point of view.
Ali, we've seen Juventus maybe lacking that necessary character to bounce back throughout this season, which is complete opposite to what we've seen from Milan. We keep thinking that that's it, you know, they're in free fall, but they keep proving us wrong. Second in the table and obviously looking good for the Champions League now next season.
Yeah, Milan is doing super, super well. I mean, they start the season with an idea, with the confirmation of Pioli, with the with the idea to bring again Ibrahimovic to kind of teach the guys, you know, the young guys, what does it mean to play in a top club. And the mix between, let's say, old player, okay, and young players, it's perfect now. And they had some problem recently. But the good thing of the Milan today is even if they lost one game, the next one they win. So this back and forward, it's good sometimes also because you can fail, okay? You can miss a game, you can lose a game, of course, but you come back stronger the next one. And the proof is today as well, you know, winning and stay on the second of the table it's a lot for this Milan that nobody expect like this at the beginning of the season, honestly, you know? If they finish fourth, everybody say, okay, that's great. We are building. So it's a great result from my point of view what is going on with Milan now.
Gab, where do we stand with regards to top four? Are we giving Milan a place or are we not going to make that decision quite yet?
Well, I think Ale made a great point on Milan's bounce back ability, right? And sort of the confidence it engenders. You know, there was a time Zlatan came in at the sort of the halfway point last season, and people said, "Oh, Zlatan's carrying him, and Zlatan this, and Zlatan that." You know, and Zlatan's going to be a great example. You know, Zlatan's been sent off twice this season. He's got himself in trouble, as we know, in the restaurant, potentially or allegedly violating COVID rules. You know, that's not necessarily the greatest example, and he's missed games through injury, which can happen when you're older. And yet, despite this, Milan have found ways to win. They won when he was injured earlier this season. Even in a situation like this, without Zlatan, without necessarily playing great, you know, they concede, and then they go, and they win the game, and they hang on. I think this is really, really important. So have some huge calls to make in the future. Obviously, Zlatan, Çalhanoğlu, Donnarumma, all those contracts expiring, big, big calls to make. But I think the amount of confidence and credibility that the players, the younger players that they've brought in, have built up, that's something that's going to stay with them next season, regardless if those aforementioned veterans stick around or not.
Ale, I'm going to ask you, and I know what the answer is already, but I may as well. Who's finishing in the Champions League then alongside Inter Milan?
Who's finishing the Champions League? I mean, what we saw now is probably the strongest team. You know, we're talking about Milan and Atalanta and Juve. They probably finish in that way.
Yeah.
Because for sure, I bet that Atalanta is not going to miss it, for sure. I mean, knowing the club and the mentality and what they built, I think they're going to finish strong, by the way, and maybe reach the second place. Milan, we already talked about that, Juve as well. What we didn't talk that much is about Lazio. Lazio had several problems in the last weeks, and then they got very beat bad by Bayern. Now they are in the position they say, okay, we come back in our comfortable position. We play one game per week, and they have tons of qualities. I mean, the players that are there, Milinkovic-Savic and Luis Alberto and Immobile, and again, I mean, this guy can do five, six wins in a row. That would be very, very dangerous.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
5 games to go, though. All to play for. Lille, PSG, Monaco and Lyon all still very much in the hunt to be crowned champions of France. I tell you what, Jules, PSG haven't done your blood pressure much good, have they, over the last few days?
today again was just excruciating. I promise you, my heart will stop eventually at some point. I cannot watch that team anymore. I can't support them either, because we know how hard it is after a Champions League game, and they've struggled all season, especially after away games. I know this one against Bayern was at home, but always 3 days later in the league, they're slow. The passing is not there. They don't create much. The rhythm is not there. And it was the same tonight, and this afternoon, sorry. It was such an early kickoff as well. 12 o'clock. It was really strange. One in France, and it was strange. And then when Saint-Étienne scored, I was like, here we go again. This is another opportunity, because Lille only drew on Friday night. It was another opportunity missed by PSG, and yet it all exploded. Mm. And good for Mario Icardi, whose future at the club is very much in doubt, who just come back from an injury, who missed the two games against Bayern, to be the hero today.
It's some title race, Jules.
It's one that we've never had in a very, very, very long time. Certainly not since the Qatari took over in Paris. Certainly not since the Russian billionaire in Monaco took over the club, Rybolovlev, as well. It's pretty special. And four teams that can still win it. And it's hard now, right now, to say, a bit like in La Liga, who's favourite. Of course, PSG, because of the squad they have, the talent and the experience that they have. But Lille, if Lille win all their games, they've got their own destiny in their own hands, and they will be champions again for the first time since 2011. If Monaco, who have certainly a great momentum going into those last five games, keep playing the way they did, and again today they were fantastic against Bordeaux, and the depth of the squad that they have, they can easily win this. And then you've got Lyon, who maybe right now don't look like the favourite, but have key players, clutch players like Memphis Depay, who was great tonight against Nantes, who can also win them for them. So it's a fantastic title race.
Meanwhile, of course, the big news breaking away from the action that we saw today was the fact that big clubs in Europe want to abandon the Champions League and form their own European Super League, the likes of Manchester City, United, Liverpool, Chelsea, Spurs, Arsenal, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Atleti, Inter, AC Milan and Juventus. Let's welcome back Gab Marcotti. Nader Manouan's with us as well. This is what UEFA had to say. For those plans, we will consider all measures available to us at all levels, both judicial and sporting, in order to prevent this happening. As previously announced by FIFA and the six federations, the clubs concerned will be banned from playing in any other competition at domestic, European or world level, and their players could be denied the opportunity to represent their national teams. It seems like it's all out war, as promised. Nader and Gab with us, as is Jules. Gab, let's just start with the basics. What's wrong with the Champions League? Why do these clubs want to change it?
Well, the 12 clubs concerned, and there's a couple other clubs that haven't come forward, but you can guess who they are, but who would be a part of this. They've taken a really hard hit with COVID, a harder hit than other clubs, because they rely more on box office receipts and whatnot. And they want to have a hand in a bigger hand in the governance of the Champions League. They want to have a bigger hand in the commercial aspects of the Champions League. And even though they don't quite say it so explicitly, they kind of ask themselves, well, we generate most of the revenue. We should get a bigger slice of the pie. Now, they made those demonstrations to the European Clubs Association, which is the body that represents 246 European clubs, and whose president is Andrea Agnelli, who, of course, also happens to be the Juventus president. They had long and difficult negotiations with UEFA over how to reform the Champions League. They voted to accept the compromise that was reached on Friday, kind of 11th hour negotiations. And then today, and I think shortly, as I'm talking now, I think in the next hour or so, they're going to come out with a statement. But today, certainly the news leaks that they're not happy with this. And the threat is that they're going to go at it alone. They say that the plan isn't a breakaway necessarily. It's just kind of a rethink, and they need this. Obviously, UEFA feel differently because they agreed the deals, especially on Friday. They're disappointed, especially with Andrea Agnelli, who, you know, does one thing with his ECA hat on and another thing with his Juventus hat on. So we'll see how this turns out. But one important point to make here, Dan, that statement that you read out, that wasn't just from UEFA. That was jointly signed by the Premier League, the Football Association, the Spanish FA, the Spanish League, the Italian League, and also Serie A. And those are the leagues that actually have the power to throw teams out of their domestic competitions, should it come to that. So UEFA certainly saying, we're going to stand tall. We're not going to back down over this. And if you want to fight, then come and get it. We just have to wait to see what the response is of those 12 clubs.
Jules, I feel like this is a discussion we have maybe every couple of years. This kind of view, this Super League is muted. So is this any different?
It's different because it's another step forward from those big clubs to try to set up a Super League, for example. I think for me, this is the start of the biggest poker game that European football has ever seen. This is it. This is show us your hand. This is our hand. It's a bit of bluff, but it's a huge poker game. Maybe those 12 clubs, the biggest clubs in Europe, just want a response from UEFA, and maybe they want UEFA to sit down again and negotiate with them. Like Gab said, a bigger slice of the Champions League money, whatever it is, TV money, sponsoring money, marketing money, and that they want to get paid more than that. Maybe they want to rethink about that new format that we're going to start in 2024 about the Champions League. This doesn't mean that there would be a proper breakaway with a proper Super League anytime soon. It just means that right now we're going down again, like you said, in all those conversations we've had before on big clubs, the most powerful clubs in the world, the biggest clubs in the world, are not happy with UEFA right now and with what's happening to them in the Champions League. And they just want a full rethink. And again, they're threatening to go and do their own thing. Right. And then FIFA and UEFA are threatening them back. And that's what I mean. This is the biggest poker game that we've ever seen.
Nadim, do you like this idea?
I think Jules has hit the nail on the head there. I think this is a very, very extreme version of poker. But one thing which I found from being in England is that a lot of the information which is being spread is stuff which is very, very pro UEFA, is very pro the league. They're making it seem like these teams, should they go and do the Super League, which I don't believe will happen, but they're making it seem as if they're deciding to leave the Premier League and only go and play those 11 other teams or something like this, which isn't the case. But like I say, I'm not somebody who is against a pushback against FIFA, because I think FIFA and some of the other governing bodies, I think they have at times an excessive amount of power, and I think some of their roles and responsibilities which they have, I don't think they reach the appropriate levels. I think given, for example, the player that got a 10-game ban for racially abusing someone, I think that should have been a lot more, because they say they're on the side of this, but then they only act in such a minimal manner. So as I say, these clubs, they have power. UEFA seems to have all the power, and they have more friends because they're threatening to kick teams out of the leagues and so on and so forth. But the fact is, you know, if you end up kicking those teams out of the respective leagues, what value do those leagues have themselves? And I think when all the right information is out there and we can see how the hands are going to play out, I think for some people, a fight against UEFA or whatever isn't going to be something which is going to bring the masses on UEFA's side. And I think some of the clubs might gain some support as well.
Gab?
Yeah, no, just a couple of things to that. I mean, the clubs would no doubt love to stay in their own domestic leagues and also play in their own breakaway league, which they run and organize, and they can split the revenue among themselves. But ultimately, I think this is a philosophical issue. You know, I think you're either part of a pyramid or you're not part of a pyramid. You're either part of a bigger whole. The domestic leagues are part of that pyramid. And I think the message from UEFA very simply is, if you're part of it, you sat down with us. You sat down with us 48 hours ago and you voted to accept this deal, right? They sat there across from the president of one of these clubs with the full support of the European Clubs Association, and they negotiated this deal. So I take your point about it being poker, but the poker is over. They voted to accept this deal. And so to have this come out now, I think that's why there is a backlash to this. And, you know, obviously it's an extreme case of kicking them out of their national leagues. But if the leagues are willing to do that, if they're willing to call their bluff, you know, that is the price you pay. You're either a part of this or you're not. And I think, you know, they already negotiated a far better deal for themselves. If the situation is so financially dire, as they say, and it certainly is bad post-pandemic, there are other things that you can do to cut costs, like have serious financial fair play, like have salary caps, don't have people go off and talk about restraint of trade and blah, 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 because that's not helping. I think that would be a step forward. So it'll be interesting to see what case they make in their statement to go and make this move. But they, again, I repeat, they insist this is not a breakaway and it's not a closed league. It's simply a league where certain founding members would have some level of control, but others could come in. I think it's going to be something a little bit like EuroLeague basketball is what they're aiming for.
I'm not in favour of the Super League. I don't buy into any of the counter arguments. I don't see, to Gab's point, I don't see how a semi-closed breakaway league benefits the game at large. To Nadim's point, as much as I absolutely agree, the monopoly that FIFA has over the game needs to be challenged because of maybe some of the things that they do or don't do that negatively impacts the game and how people want to see the game run. I don't see this as being a meaningful challenge. This is a challenge that is self-serving to 12 clubs. It doesn't address the monopoly that is FIFA or how that has failed football in a larger sense. So if your intent is to challenge FIFA's monopoly, you have to provide a reason as to how and why you need to do this that is more than just we're going to get more money for ourselves. I also don't see how just having a breakaway league on the side to put more money in your pockets serves the wider game better in terms of at least keeping league competitive, continuing to represent communities and cities as the game does, and having every level of the game have something to look up to and a way to benefit from. I just feel that this drops the ball in a number of ways that I, like Gab, I'm willing to see, eager to see how they try to explain it.
Jules, listening to big names in England, it's been unanimous. Like, everyone seems to be against this proposal. I'm just wondering what the reaction has been like in France.
It's been a bit different in France because obviously, as you saw, PSG are not among the list. As we know, Nasser El Khelaifi, the PSG chairman, president, is very close to Alexander Seferin, the UEFA president. And right now, PSG, certainly what they're briefing is that they didn't want to go against UEFA. They were happy with the new format, the negotiation over the new format of the Champions League. And I think they found it really difficult almost to betray, in a way, UEFA by going along with the other 12 clubs that have right now been setting up this European Super League, really. And I believe Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund, although German clubs are a bit different because of the way they run, I think are in a similar position. And that's why there's only 12 clubs and not 15, because there are clearly three missing that could well be PSG, Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund. But so for us in France, it's been, OK, what could be the consequences for PSG? Then could PSG really be out of this Super League if it's finally created? What if they're the only kind of big clubs left in the Champions League? Well, at least we can win it every season then, but it's not ideal, of course, for the standing that the club wants to be. So this has been more the reaction in France than I think been different to England, for example, like Nedim was saying.
What about Italy, yeah?
Well, it's funny because I mean, this issue's come up before, and as you generally, as you might imagine, you know, a number of sort of Juventus fans are in favor of it if Juventus gets to be a part of it. I think the situation with Inter and Milan is a little bit different. I mean, those two clubs, they feel a bit let down because those were the clubs that probably have been hit hardest from by financial fair play, in the sense that, you know, the ownerships changed, they inherited disastrous positions, they had to put a lot of money in, they're still losing a lot of money to try to get back to where they feel that they should be historically. I think also, and look, let's call a spade, the people who are driving this are Ed Woodward at Manchester United and the Glazers, Liverpool and Real Madrid, as well as obviously Andrea Agnelli at Juventus. So these are the key clubs, and I think, you know, Milan and Inter historically going back a decade felt, well, we were in the driver's seat for these discussions. Now it's almost a case of FOMO, right? Fear of missing out in our place. But certainly those are two clubs that do not feel well served by UEFA, and for them, you know, this would be a way to make up the lost ground and the big hill that they still have to climb up to be back among Europe's elite.
Nadim, from a player's perspective, would you embrace this idea?
To be honest, having looked at some of the wording, especially in the Premier League, they have the right to be able to ban a player from taking part in any competition, whether it's whether it's the league, it's European Championships, you know, World Cups and things like this. So I think it puts players in a very, very tricky situation. But to go back to the whole concept that Jules put forward about how it's a game of poker, I don't think the clubs will risk their players not being able to play in other competitions to create this league itself. So this statement, which is going to come in the next hour or so, I think is very, very important, because as a player, you are left in a really, really tricky situation, because those 12 clubs, and, you know, possibly if it gets to 15, those are the teams who, in my opinion, people want to watch in the Champions League and so on and so forth. But if those players are only going to be limited to those leagues and can't play anywhere else, then you do have to ask the question, will those players continue to go there? And it's going to be a tricky one, but I don't know. I think for where we're at now with negotiations, I think there's something else to come, something a bit bigger. And listening to Gab talk about what happened on Friday is really interesting, because, you know, most people aren't hearing those conversations. So as this plays out, I think all ears will be up.
Despite all the criticism that Shaka has about Gab Marcotti, he does explain these things very well. You can check out his latest article over on the website. And as always, there'll be a lot more discussion about this future Super League on the next edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, which will drop on Monday.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Well, let's focus now on what happened in the Premier League today. Fulham 1-0 up. However, Arsenal got a late equaliser. Their game finishing 1-1. Meanwhile, Manchester United with a victory over Burnley puts them second. Still a little bit of pressure on City, but more importantly, all but solidifying a place in the Champions League next season. Jules and Nadim with us. A bit of a boring day in England, really. Let's start with United, shall we, Nadim? They won. Nice.
United keep winning. They're on this really great unbeaten run. And to be honest, I would quite fancy them to be in a significant title race next season, because they're showing that they're very hard to play against. But one thing, to give it a bit of a, I don't know, maybe it's a kiss of death, but the last time City, well, in 2012 when City won the league, this was the points gap that they had at this stage of the season, and that went down to a goal in the very last minute of that season. So maybe something more exciting is to come. But, you know, I think for United, it almost feels like this time they've probably left it a bit too late. But the fact is, they keep finding ways to win games. They're not always perfect. Sometimes they go behind. But they seem to be a team who ended up being quite hard to beat. And, you know, credit to Greenwood now for what he's done, because I think he scored the most goals for Manchester United as a teenager off the back of these two goals, going ahead of Wayne Rooney. So they have something going for them. They have a manager who believes in them. Like, this title race, it feels like it's run. Although in the past you've seen that it can get close. But unfortunately, the way the Premier League is at the moment, it does kind of feel like City are going to win it. United are probably the second best team, and then everybody else is just bickering every 3 days to see if they can go one position or not. So it's a shame that it's like this, but as a Blue, I don't mind it.
Yeah, I was going to say, with your Manchester City ways, you're always on some sort of double bluff that this could turn into a proper title race. Jules, overall, go on, Nathan.
I was going to say, it's just because somebody reminded me of that fact the other day, because someone said City are going to win the league, and then they pulled out the stat, they found the right stats guy and said, this is how it was in 2011-2012 when it went down to the last game of the season. So it just goes to show, even though we believe it's done, you know, we have seen this work out before to make it a bit more interesting.
Yeah, it won't happen. Meanwhile, Jules, you take a look at the fact that United, they do keep winning.
Yeah, they do. And they, even if it was not always pretty this afternoon, and they left it really late after Tarkowski leveled the score just after the break, and Greenwood and then Cavani had to score those winning goals towards the end. I'm not sure Cavani should have been on the bench in that first half, to be fair, and he came on at halftime. But in the end, Solskjaer and his players found a way of winning again. And the great run that they have away from home, it's a shame that they drop all those points at home, because otherwise they would be much, much closer, obviously, to City. But I think Adam is right. If they get their recruitment right, which I know is a big issue for them and for Ed Woodward, but now that they've got a proper sporting director and technical director in John Murtough and Darren Fletcher, maybe it would be easier for them to find the right players, especially that they probably need a defensive midfielder, a centre-back, and maybe someone up front if Cavani leaves. But if they get those right guys, then there'll certainly be a real force next season.
It's interesting, Jules, isn't it? When you think back to the start of the season, I don't have the predictions at hand, but I imagine a lot of people would have Arsenal and Manchester United in similar positions. Arsenal coming into the season off the back of the FA Cup, they win the Charity Shield as well. Yet, another shambolic performance today. And if I'm an Arsenal fan, I'm finding it very difficult to have any sort of optimism looking forward, because they are just terrible.
Oh, that's a bit hard. They were not terrible at Slavia on Thursday. They were not terrible at Sheffield United.
Oh, Jules, come on. Is that where we are now? Slavia Prague and Sheffield United.
Slavia. That was a quarter-final of a European competition against Slavia Prague. And they were fantastic for, well, the first half hour, certainly, or the first half. They're just. I think the problem, Dan, is more consistency than them being atrocious. They haven't been atrocious all season. That's not true. They certainly have been very, very inconsistent, capable of really good performance, like we saw against Chelsea, for example, when they won at the Emirates on Boxing Day, and some far more difficult performances, like today, which wasn't good. There was a lot of rotation made by Mikel Arteta, but overall, this was not good enough. But I think to say that they are an atrocious team is pushing it a bit. But they certainly need to win in consistency, because they certainly can't have another season like this.
Jules, they're ninth in the Premier League, which overall has got pretty poor standard this season, considering everything else that's been going on with all those other clubs. And you're trying to sell me that this isn't an atrocious sign, that there's hope there?
No, there's certainly hope, because they've got really good young players. I think they've got the right manager in place for sure for years to
Why?
Come.
Why? What have you seen from Arteta? What has he done?
I think in the way they play, you can certainly see the patterns of play, what he asks his players to do. I think the problem is he doesn't have, certainly in some positions, players who are not good enough to do what he wants them to do. And that's a problem for any managers at any level in the whole entire world. If you don't have players good enough for what you want them to express on the pitch and to produce on the pitch, then you're in trouble. But certainly I think that the ideas that Arteta has, his methodology, his philosophy, and what he's asking the players, because when it's clicked this season and when he has worked, you saw how good they could have been. And then if you put on top of that the likes of Saka and Emil Smith Rowe, those young players, Kieran Tierney, even Gabriel, I think, although he made a mistake today, there is some nice players there. The problem, as I've been saying, Dan, is that consistency has been a huge issue. And at times, I give you that, especially between November and December, when they had that horrendous run of bad results, it's been a real problem. That's why they're ninth in the table.
Just a heads up, Nadim, Jules is very much an Arsenal fan, just so we can clear that up, so you understand where this is coming from. I'm sorry, I'm not buying what you're selling, Nadim.
Well, you say that, but you say you were an Arsenal fan. You did say that, didn't you?
Definitely.
Because it sounds like you enjoy being outraged more so than you enjoy the good times. And for Arsenal, they've had a bad season. It's clear, it's obvious to see. They're in ninth. But I think they can get better. I think if you were in a position whereby you thought they're only going to get worse, then I'd be more concerned. I wouldn't be surprised if next year, you know, maybe they're eighth. Maybe things are looking up.
Oh, my God.
But at the end of the day, no, they're... They're nowhere near as good as they could be or should be, but they do have young talent now, which is exciting some of the fans. fan base. And I think for times gone by, they've not really had that. So there is hope, there's optimism. And I think if they nurture that talent and put the right pieces around them, then I think they can be a more dynamic and sort of more enjoyable team to watch. Because at times this year, they've looked good. And other times, they've looked like they did against Liverpool, where you wonder, why did they even turn up? But I think next year will be better. But this year has been one for the books for them, for sure.
Why does Arteta keep getting a pass, Nadim?
Because you have to ask yourself the question, you know, what else, what's he doing off the field? Is there anybody else that they can bring in? Is he part of a long-term project? Is he part of a short-term thing? And, you know, if you believe that a manager is part of a long-term project, then you have to give them time. But if you bring somebody in and say you're going to get time, but you don't give it to them, then what's the point in hiring them in the first place? And it seems to me like Arsenal have become a project, which is crazy to say, but they have become a project. And ultimately for Arteta, I think his real judgment comes next season, because this year, as I say, it's been a very much of a down year. But if he can build and turn it into something better next year, then you could say that the investment in his time this year was worth it for the next.
All Arsenal's problems are mentality issues for them, in my opinion. And it speaks to their successes and their failures. You mentioned the FA Cup last season, the Community Shield start of this season, the result against Slavia Prague. In cup competitions where Arsenal have to employ a cup mentality, where it's win or go home, that's where you've seen Arsenal be at their best. But at the same time, our criticism around Arsenal seemingly weekly is the lack of real strong characters within that dressing room. And while we're talking about cup games and league games both being 90 minutes, in league games, you feel as though you have another chance. And you have another chance next week. Before you know it, you're in November or December, and there's no chance of you finishing top four. And that's where you miss the personalities, the strong mentalities most within the dressing room. And to your question about why Arteta is getting a pass, it's because of those cup wins. And because if you're sitting in Arsenal's boardroom, you think what we're missing is leaders on the field, on the other side of the white line, whereas other clubs take different mentalities where you ask for that leadership quality from the sidelines. Atletico Madrid is the first club that comes to mind where you see that club take on the personality of its manager. Arsenal are asking or expecting something totally different. They want to find the player that transforms a very talented Arsenal team to have that cup mentality week in, week out in the league.
Jules had Arsenal 4th, Manchester United 5th.
Oh, OK.
Apparently, at the start of this. They told me I had to bring that up, Jules. Sorry. Taking a look then at Monday's clash in the Premier League. Liverpool are favourites going away against Leeds 6-4 on. We now know the lineup of this year's FA Cup final. It will be Leicester City against Chelsea. Leicester booking a place on Sunday after beating Southampton. Chelsea, of course, that win on Saturday against City. Meanwhile, Nadim is with us, as is former Leicester and, for a little bit as well, Southampton goalkeeper Casey Keller joins us. Casey, in the end, Leicester very much deserving of this.
Yeah, it sure looked that way. I mean, even the chances created in the first half, the better of the chances easily went Leicester's way throughout the match. And again, classic Jamie Vardy using his pace, great turn in the form of Iheanacho. Okay, a little bit lucky off of the second attempt as the first shot was clearly wide. But Brendan Rodgers has a great team spirit in this Leicester side. And it was something that, you know, that Martin O'Neill established years ago. The team spirit of Leicester is you know, legendary. And again, they push themselves into another season where the expectations, they're overachieving once again. Third place in the league, now in an FA Cup final. And it's just great to see as a former Leicester player that they just continue in this vein of success.
They, of course, I mentioned, will face Chelsea in the final, who eliminated Manchester City on Saturday, Nadim. Big deal for City?
I think so. I think the plan was to... The semi-final is a big game. And although Pep rotated his squad, I think he's rotated his squad consistently for the past 3-4 months. And it's the semi-final of a competition. And they're excited to win it. I think as players, being in England, winning an FA Cup means a lot. So I think they will be very, very disappointed. But then in some ways, you could see it as a positive now because it narrows their focus to completing the stuff in the league and seeing if they can make a Champions League final. And obviously the Carabao Cup final, I think, coming up in a couple of weeks as well. Like I was surprised by the performance. I thought it would have been bigger. I thought it would have been greater. But then you look at them this season, and I think that was the 51st game this year. So maybe they kind of run out of sort of energy to deal with everything on all four fronts. But it's one of those things, unfortunately. I think I kind of fancy Chelsea going into the game because I think they've been in some ways some better form, and I think they had a bit more momentum with them. But it's a shame for City. The quadruple's not going to happen. But for me, you can find me on this show saying I didn't think it was likely in the past, and it's proven to be the case. I think they'll get over it, and I think they'll do well between now and the end of the year.
It's a Carabao Cup final this weekend, actually, as they will take on Spurs. Meanwhile, KC, from a goalkeeping perspective, Zach Steffen getting everything wrong for the goal?
Yeah, he kind of really started. He thought he could narrow the angle, got himself stuck in no man's land, attempted to retreat. I mean, I'm not one of those guys that believes that you just make a commitment and you keep going. I think he made the right choice to try to get back into a better position, but the play was just too quick. And yeah, and that's tough. I mean, because reading the game is one of the most difficult aspects. And when you're only playing every once in a while, it's so hard to get into any kind of real mental rhythm with how you're reading. Yeah, you can make saves, you can in training, and you can see that kind of stuff, but it's that pace in which to split-second decisions that you have to come out at the edge of your box, clean something up, or not. And in this case, he made a poor decision. He came off his line. It wasn't the time to do it. He couldn't recover, and it's a shame.
The FA Cup final will be live on ESPN Plus May the 15th. Should be a cracker, shouldn't it? Leicester City taking on Chelsea. Our coverage will start at 12:30 Eastern.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Meanwhile, Borussia Dortmund then taking all 3 points, beating Werder Bremen by 4-1. Archie Rintat was there for us and he spoke to Erling Haaland after the game.
How was it for you when you weren't scoring in the short time that it was?
Yeah, it's of course, but now the minutes restarted and now it's gone around, I don't know, 50, 60 minutes without scoring, so I have to soon to score again.
Potty mouth. Let's take a look then at how things stand. Borussia Dortmund, as I mentioned, 4 points now adrift of Eintracht Frankfurt after they got thrashed yesterday. Meanwhile, Bayern Munich extending their lead at the top of the table. Leipzig, of course, only managed the draw on Friday. Bayern Munich with that win, 7 points clear as they will be retaining their title once again. For Borussia Dortmund, Casey, it's opportunities that they haven't been able to take in the past, did so today.
Yeah, very much so. And you saw an excellent return of form of Gio Reyna. You mentioned that he'd been probably coming off the bench more in recent weeks. And it's a long season for a young kid to come in, started the season so well and then had some injury issues and really needed this performance to near the end of the season to just reestablish himself. We saw the dip in form, not only of Erling Haaland going on this long streak, but just the total Borussia Dortmund side that just hasn't been performing well. And today, after going a goal down, showed some very good character in being able to put together a performance that they needed to give themselves an opportunity for the Champions League spots. We know that's crucial for Dortmund. We know it's crucial to keep the young talent that they have at this squad, to see if eventually they can challenge Bayern Munich at the top of the table and try to pry a Bundesliga title away from the champions, and today was a big performance. Great to see Gio Reyna back in the form that he showed today.
Casey Keller, great stuff as always. Thank you very much for joining us. Midweek matches in the Bundesliga coming up for you on Tuesday, including Bayern Munich against Bayer Leverkusen, Köln against Leipzig, Eintracht Frankfurt looking to bounce back against Augsburg. Then on Wednesday, Borussia Dortmund play host to Union Berlin. All those games available on ESPN+. Well, that's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. God, we've got a lot of stuff here today. Fear not, though. More to come. Extra time is next. Nadim and Jules back with us to answer your tweets. Plus, of course, Shaka as well. Welcome in, then, to the latest edition of Extra Time. Are we on?
I guess so.
Oh, wait. Wait, hold your horses. Here we are. Yes. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Shaka with me, as is Nadim and Jules. And as always, we're addressing the big questions here. No, not whether or not Jules has joined a barbershop quartet. We are addressing, though, hats and goalkeepers, Shaq. Dean Henderson wore a cap in the second half of the game today and got a high five from Lindelof after making a save. This question's two parts, Shaka.
Okay.
Have you ever worn a hat? Or have you ever received a high five?
I think I might have received a high five or two in my time. Hats don't make sense to me. I don't think they serve the purpose that you think.
The purpose is to keep the sun out of your eyes.
Yes, but if the ball goes up into the sun and you're looking out for the... and you're looking at the ball in the sun,
right,
the lid of the cap does nothing for you.
So why do people wear caps?
I don't know, Dan. That was what I'm trying to say. I never wore caps.
Right.
It's not like you're at the beach and you're trying to look out, you know...
What are you looking at the beach,
Jack? You're looking out over the lovely horizon.
Yeah.
You know, when you're trying to keep the sun out of your eyes. It's totally different. You don't look at the lovely surf when you're around. Carry on. What was the other part? High fives.
High fives.
Yeah, I got a couple of
high fives. Yeah, you got a few high fives. Mm-hmm. Nadim, do you wish you could have worn a hat during the game?
No, to be honest, no, I don't at all. But as for high fives, though, I tend to give out high fives if they really deserve it, but I'll make sure that they earn it. It's not just one or two saves. You need to make three or four, and then I'll start giving you the high fives.
Oh, I like it.
He's selfish with
high
fives.
No, because then you feel like you've really earned it.
Yeah.
Jules, do you get high fives after a good performance on the Gab and Jules podcast? Or was it just a big man hug from Gab?
Neither, which is a bit disappointing. As you know, in France, men kiss each other to say hello and goodbye. And you see often in football, when you score a goal, you know, they all celebrate together, but there's a lot of kissing. I wonder if Nedim and Shaka were kissers or not so much. In France, even at my level, we were very much kissers.
Right, okay. Well, this is taking us down an interesting corridor.
I would like to defer from that question.
No kissing?
No.
No? Nedim?
I've given a few head kisses. I've given one or two kisses on the cheek, face cheeks, but you have to really, really deserve those.
Yeah.
We're talking match winners, game winners, that type of thing.
Yeah, who got those kisses, Nadim?
To be honest, I barely remember, but they deserved it in the moment.
Yeah.
So you just handing out kisses and you can't remember who you kissed?
No, special ones.
But you can't even remember who you kissed.
That's the thing.
But did you get kissed? I imagine Di Canio was a kisser.
I don't know.
No?
I don't know.
Okay. That's HR saying we've got to move on. If you were a player of one of these 12 teams forming Super Leagues, how would you feel about it? Especially
Rich.
If you're... especially if you're playing for the team and you get banned from playing for a country, Shaq.
I'm not in favour of it at all. I enjoy playing for my country. I still think it's the, as I've said time and time again, it's the highest honour in football. I don't want it. For me, there is no motivation for this other than money. If that's all that motivates you as a player, I'm going to get paid five times more than I would otherwise, then fine, that's on you. That's just not me.
If the Super League did happen, which new sport would you follow and what job would Jules like if he quit as a football journalist?
Ooh.
Oh.
I would watch the Super League. And I think, just to come back on the question before, I think all those players of those clubs are in the unknown right now. No one knows what's going to happen. You don't know if they will get banned or not. But if you ask them, do you want to play Messi and Barcelona every week? Do you want to play Real Madrid every week or Liverpool? They will say yes, of course they will, because they want to play the biggest games. I would probably become a basketball reporter. I moved to New York, or to Bristol, Connecticut, I guess. Mm. And I'll just follow the NBA, which was pretty cool.
Oh, look at that star.
Oh, looks like my jump shot a little bit.
Yeah. Nadim, it's the old classic, isn't it? What you would have done if you weren't a footballer. I think we discussed this before. You'd be a sprinter, yeah?
Mm.
Well, no, probably not. I probably would have just been still doing some sort of college thing, maybe an accountant or whatever, because I was good at that. But
all right,
at the end of the day, I was the educated type. But I think if the Super League happened, I'd probably watch it, like Jules would say. But if I had to watch another sport, I'd just take up watching golf, and I'd try and get a job on the PGA Tour and just travel across America with all the good weather watching the good golf.
I like golf.
I knew we were going to brag about your golf. I knew it.
I need to say as well, you talked about high fives. You deserve a high five for your podcast, because it was a lot of fun to be on. So there you go. Have that.
What you doing? Don't compliment his podcast when you're on this show.
I think Jules deserves a kiss.
Dan, it's not about
you.
Why?
What is going on?
Yeah, talent. Talent recognizes talent.
Yeah, no podcasting. Gavin Jones. All right.
Do you want a high five, Dan?
No, I don't. I'm upset now.
Dan wants a high five, Nadim.
Your hands are so much bigger than mine.
I'm not giving you a high five.
Well, who's going to give me a high five then?
You don't deserve it.
We've got to frame up. I've got to show the difference between Shaka's hand size and mine. Can we do this? Which camera? Right, so there's Shaka's hand. Look at that. Look at those. You can have twice mine. High five. Well, that hurt my hand.
You could do a two-handed high five.
Oh, dear. I can fit my whole hand in my mouth. Would you like to see that?
No, thanks.
See, don't get out of Gav and Jules podcast.
Go on, show the people.
No.
I think the people want to see you put your whole hand in your mouth.
You want to see it? Ready?
Yeah.
Here it goes.
Yeah.
God, this is good television now. Yep. Sports Emmys, you watching?
Oh my god.
Now, is that a big mouth or a small hand? Right. Nadim.
That's how we got the job.
Nadim, what were the London derbies with QPR like? Which was the most intense?
Oh god.
The one with Chelsea. It felt more one way, because Chelsea, obviously, they were very successful and so on. At QPR, we weren't successful in that moment. But the ones with Brentford, I think they felt better, because it was more competitive. The stadiums were just that little bit closer and there was more of an edge to it. But yeah, as I say, they were good. They were good. I think they mattered, but probably not as much as other derbies that I played, because I was lucky enough to play in the sort of Sunderland-Newcastle one, and that literally is life or death. But the London derbies in West London were good, as I say, but they never really felt of incredible significance, if you know what I mean, because the only eyes that were on it were for the people of West London, as opposed to the rest of the country, because it didn't really feel like it was, as I say, it was one of those big games.
Nadim, when a player gets the highest salary in the team league, does his attitude change?
When they get a higher salary, it depends on the player, because there's some players who we've seen who aren't motivated by money. So when they do get the higher salary, it's because they deserve it, because they work hard and so on. But in the same way that is true for some, I have played with a player when I was younger who got a high salary, which probably came a bit too soon, and he decided to down tool from that moment. And within a year, 2 years, he actually quit the game. So that came at the worst possible time for him, because he wasn't ready for it. But I think overall, if you're talking about the best of the best, then their attitude remains the same, and they end up being even more value to the team, because they understand that they are probably the most important player in the whole squad.
How much do you talk about it, Nadim?
Well, in the MLS, it's a bit more open, since you can see all online.
Yeah.
But in England, that was weird. But in England, obviously, it's people say this guy's on this, that guy's on that. But there are lots of people, like myself, as long as I'm being paid well, I'm not concerned about what somebody else is getting because the money's not coming from my pocket. But for others, they're infatuated by it. Well, I need to earn more than him because this is his status, that's that status. But for some of those players, you know, they end up not staying at club very long because it gets to a point where money's more important than just playing itself. And yes, there is a balance, but I think in the end, the players that stay the longest are the ones who want to be there, and they want to be there regardless of whether they're number one, number two, or number three.
Nadim, how did you know that it was time to hang up your boots? What was the main factor in that decision?
It's all about me today. I would say, as I went over to the United States in 2018, the plan was to stay there for 2.5 years, and then I wanted to stop. So it wasn't a physical ailment or anything like that that made me decide to stop. The plan was to stop. I'd made plans to put my kids into school back in England for the January after retiring in December. I told my family this is what I was going to do. I had work lined up and things like this. So that it was just part of my journey, and I feel very fortunate because I retired on my own terms, and not many people get that opportunity. Financially, I was secure. Physically, I was good, and I felt proud to be able to walk off the field and know that I could carry on. But for where I am in my life, I'd rather do something else. So the plan was there once I knew that I'd be going to America, and I just needed to play well in those years and then walk away happy, and that's thankfully what I've done.
Where did the working with me come into your plan, Nathan?
You know, this before I actually joined ESPN, I did go on one show with you one time, and I thought this guy seems a bit moody. But having spent more time with you now on a week-to-week basis, you're a little bit less moody than I thought. So that's a positive.
I think that was
so working with you now. This is as good as working with some of the greats of the Premier League. You know, it's just as fun because now I know you're an Arsenal fan. I know what to say every single week.
Yeah, well, that's definitely not true. From one Arsenal fan to another, Jules, when did you know it was time to hang up your boots?
Well, to tell the truth, because Nadim didn't say the truth, when you know you can't run anymore, like Nadim was, and me, and probably a lot of others, that's really, really when you stop playing. But Nadim was too kind to say the truth. I had to stop my career because my dad said, you have to study now, so forget all your dreams about maybe becoming one day a professional player.
Wow. Is that why you're so pushy with your kids now, to try and get them into sports, to kind of live through them?
What do you mean pushy with my kids? My middle one, by the way, is going to try out Watford soon. So
well, of course he has. He hasn't slept for 2 years. He's been practicing every day.
He's very determined without me behind him. Don't worry about him.
Oh, very good, Jules. How old is he then on trial at Watford?
8.
Oh, perfect. 8. Oh, imagine how pushy Jules is.
We've seen him.
Yeah, I know, we've seen him.
Oh, no way, that's not true.
We know what he's like. Finally, Dan, who was your favourite player growing up? For all of the guys, which World Cup is the most memorable for you and why? John Barnes was my absolute favourite player. I loved watching him, everything he did in England shirt for Liverpool as well. Favourite World Cup, 1998, I would say, probably.
Okay.
It's the first one I was allowed into a pub.
Oh, nothing about the football.
Michael Owen scored against Argentina.
I can't remember a single game.
It was good. Ah, oh, the starring. Nathan, favourite World Cup memory?
Oh, it's tough to say. I'll make it a bit biased. I think it was in Germany in 2006, wasn't it? And I actually went over to watch a game over there. So I'm just going to say that one, because to be a part of it was a lot of fun.
Oh, and what game did you go and see?
Yeah, it was England versus Trinidad and Tobago, I believe, and it might have been in Nuremberg. But it was interesting to go over there and to see all that. And it, you know, as a young player, I'm like, oh, this is something I'll dream to do at some point. Never happened, but it felt great at the time.
Did you go and see that game at all, Shane?
You're welcome, Nathan.
Yeah, thank you, Shaka. Thank you.
Was that Peter Crouch pulling on Kevin Jones' dreads?
That was Peter Crouch and then Steven Gerrard in injury time.
Yeah. Oh, no.
That was my last ever game for Trinidad and Tobago.
Was it, Shaq?
Yeah.
Well, here you are.
Yeah. Made him force me to retire.
Made him booing in the stands.
It's my fault. You're welcome.
Jules, what's your favourite World Cup? France, 2008.
For the same reason as Dan. Same World Cup for the same reasons.
I'm just glad you asked me the question. I'm really glad you asked me the question. Yes. I think I'll probably say, let me think. Hang on, let me think. 2018 and 1998. You know when your country actually wins it? Do you know that feeling? Oh, no, you don't know that feeling, of course. Neither of you three know that feeling, but I've had two already in my lifetime, which is great. And 1990, because I finished the Panini album. And that was really, I was 10, and that was the one really I remember, the first one.
I can't wait for your son to score for England against France and watch you cry, Jules. Beaten by
your own dreams. In your dreams. He will never play for England. My kids will never play for England.
Oh, no, the rebel in them will take them very much to Three Lions. That is it. Thank you very much, guys. ESPN FC returns your screen tomorrow. Liverpool in action against Leeds. Plus, I imagine, a lot more discussion about the proposed Super League. Thank you.